I wanted to share a theory that I've had after listening to a conversation on the Kinda Funny Gamescast. They were talking about the Nintendo Switch, and they were talking about how there was an, like, they believe, I don't remember who it was in the show, but like they were saying about how they thought that the pandemic changed the trajectory of the Switch, right? So, which makes a lot of sense that they, you know, Nintendo were on the path that they were on, and then they sold a bajillion of them. And that they expected that that changed the timeline for the successor to the Switch, right? So we went from Switch 1 to Switch 2 was going to be when it was going to be, but they ended up pushing it out a little bit further because they had enough in the pipeline and they had just sold so many consoles. And why not continue? If people keep buying it, why would you replace it, right? Like, just push that out a bit further.
Right.
And Nintendo have proven that they can make it work, right? That they can develop their games to a quality level that will still work. And knowing Nintendo, there would have been a crossover. So even if some of these games were going to be developed for to Switch and the new Nintendo Switch, would obviously still work on the existing Switch. So basically, my theory is Tears of the Kingdom was supposed to be the Switch 2 launch game. That's my theory.
Hmm.
And
that seems possible.
Because it would have lined up with what they most likely would have done or close enough, and they decided that they would just, you know, release it and it would be a big deal game for them on the timeline that they would have wanted to release the game. But my expectation is this was supposed to be the launch title, because could you have gotten much more of a perfect launch title for the Switch 2 than to follow up the Switch 1, which obviously launched with Breath of the Wild, to be with Tears of the Kingdom? And then they could have been like, and look at what's possible with the new Nintendo Switch, even though it ended up being possible with the existing Nintendo Switch, which is a much more complex and bigger game. And maybe they had to do a lot of optimization to make that work. And or when we get the new Nintendo Switch, we'll see just how good Tears of the Kingdom looks instead, right? But that's my simple theory, is that, because it is a little bit weird that they launched both of those Zelda games on the same console. Like, there's not been a follow-up to Mario, right? There hasn't been an Odyssey 2.
It is very strange. There's no follow-up Mario. There's no... I mean, they milked Mario Kart 8 for all they could.
Yep.
With, like,
when they could have done a Mario
amount.
Kart 9 by now.
Yeah. Yeah.
But they didn't. They've owned, you know, like, I know they've had multiple of some games, but of like the big, big heavy hits on the Switch, only Zelda got the sequel of the ones that I can think about anyway, the ones that are jumping out to me. Pokemon doesn't count because there's basically one every year anyway, except this year, unless you guess dead the DLC at the beginning of the year, but let's come on. So yeah, that's my little theory. I don't know if that passes any sense to you, but it was just a little shower thought that I had, I thought I'd bring to the show.
Yeah, completely makes sense.
I agree. And I was thinking about this. I saw a post on Threads this morning saying that it's been 2,500 days of Nintendo Switch, which is an obscene number of days when you think about it, for like having the same console. And the fact that the same console, like if you bought it in March 2017... You know, disregard the OLED upgrade. It's still the same machine. And that machine, if you bought it in March 2017, you can run Tears of the Kingdom on it in 2024.
Yeah.
I think it's wild. And I think it's shown that Nintendo, I mean, this is something that we knew before, right? That we've always knew, how they can sort of play their own game, do their own thing, and you're still going to buy a Nintendo console. Even if you have a PlayStation, if you have an Xbox, or if you have a PC, you're always going to want to have the Nintendo on the side. Now, we knew that, you know, from the Game Boy era, from the DS. We sort of maybe forgot about it during the Wii U era. And you guys will remember, like, during those times, we saw a lot of people, a lot of hot takes saying, oh, it's time for Nintendo to be acquired because nobody wants to buy Nintendo consoles anymore. Now it's all about PC and mobile gaming. And look where we are today.
Yep.
It's incredible. It's not even just a turnaround of Nintendo as a company. It's the Nintendo Switch has been a turnaround for portable gaming, period. To the point where mid-cycle, you know, a company like Valve came in and said, well, you know, we also kind of want to try have a Nintendo Switch, but for PC games. And it's been successful, very mm-hmm. successful, to the point where now other PC makers are saying, well, I guess we got to do portables. So, like, it's not even a turnaround for Nintendo as a company from Japan. They reinvented the same industry that they created 40 years ago.
Yep.
It's incredible.
I think the reason you saw that post, it reminded me, is the reason this conversation came up, because they were talking on the show that the Nintendo Switch has now passed the record for the longest distance between home console releases for Nintendo. So the Nintendo Switch has now been on the market for longer than any home Nintendo console in history.
That's wild.
Which is
incredible.
When you think about it, it's like, how could it be like with the NES or the SNES, right? Like, because we weren't in the like console wars then. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I guess maybe by the SNES there was with Sega. But yeah, it's like a wild thing to think about. Like, you would think that with the power of these things now, that maybe that timeline would actually be shrinking. And I guess it should, but it isn't. But anyway, that's not what we're here to talk about today. Summer Games
Fest. Yeah, but I want to say something about
it. I'm sorry, Shahid. I apologize. What are you
going
to say? No,
not at all. Not at all. I've got an even wilder point to make. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure if either of you will completely agree or disagree. But I think Nintendo stopped being a hardware-first company after Super Nintendo. That was a point at which they realized that they were a software-leading company and it's too expensive to keep up in the hardware arms race. And because they were so firmly established by the time of the Super Famicom / Super Nintendo in terms of content, because they had so much game development experience, because they'd shipped so much software, the hardware almost, but not quite, almost became irrelevant. That's what gave them the massive cash pile. Their whole premise before was razors and razor blades, right? A lot of the industry was like that. Make a slight loss on the hardware, make all your money on the software. And that's not a game that they wanted to play. And that's why they ended up with a massive cash pile. And the cash pile just went back into Nintendo software development. And it meant they could save that, preserve it as a war chest for long runs like they've got now, where they're not fighting the same fight, right? They're not in the same fight as everybody else. I mean, yeah, we say it's a console, but we've talked about this over the years. It's not a console. It's a console and it's a portable.
Yeah.
It's a console with portable plus hardware when it was launched. And now it's a portable that happens to be able to play it on your telly. And nobody cares how the graphics look because the games are so great. That's why they can afford to do what they're doing. That's why they can take their time. And of course, software and hardware development timelines don't neatly overlap. But because they've got that war chest, they're able to take that gamble and say, hey, we're still doing fine in the market. We've got cheap enough hardware that we can actually profit on the hardware as well. Let's keep it going.
I agree with most of your statement, but not like entirely. Like, because they clearly do care about hardware, but differently to their competitors, right? Where, like, I think for Nintendo, I think what they clearly care about is gimmicks, but not for gimmicks' sake, right? Because I think when they have actually done gimmicks for gimmicks' sake, they've not actually worked out for them. But they care about, like, quirky features that they can use in their games, right?
That's because they can compete there.
Yes.
They can't. My point is that they opted out of the traditional arms race.
Yes.
Of ever-increasing CPU power, ever-increasing GPU. Exactly.
Yeah.
They just opted out of that and went laterally, and it's genius.
And I think now it's actually paying increased dividends for them because it seems like at least Nintendo's development time for their big-ticket games is shorter than the development time of PlayStation's big ticket games or Xbox's big ticket games, because those games just seem to be so, so hard to make because they're in the graphics fidelity fight.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like Nintendo is able to maybe produce things that are of equal game quality faster.
Yes, because they haven't had to invest in all of the same new technologies that the other players have.
Yep.
They haven't got to employ 2,000 people to write a grass shader.
Yeah. They sure don't. Summer Games Fest is well and truly over. And I, like a sicko, watched all of the conferences, by and large. All the major ones, I'll say. Like, I didn't watch, like, the PC Game Showcase, but I watched the major conferences. I watched all of them. I wanted to give my 6 games that I'm excited about, and I welcome the two of you to give any games that you're excited about or to add on to any of the things that I wanted to pull out. The first two games, honestly, surprisingly, I actually think are my two most anticipated games of the year, or they're up there. And they're both Ubisoft games, which is just like, what a time to be alive. Star Wars Outlaws, it looks really fun in the way in which I would want a Star Wars game to be fun. I'm actually interested in this game because it is not a Jedi story. You're essentially a bounty hunter, you know, like in the Star Wars universe. Timeline wise is not what I would necessarily want, which is like, it's the timeline of the original movies, like the kind of the time that you're in. So I'm sure there'll be some characters popping up. I prefer it when these kinds of stories can be told in the universe, but not kind of like in the time, but we'll see how that goes. But the game looks good. The story is intriguing. The characters look intriguing, and the action that I've seen so far, it looks more like what I would want. Like the Jedi games are not really what I'm looking for. You know, I think they're on the difficulty curve that I'm not particularly interested in, and they have some like Souls-like elements, which is like not particularly what I'm looking for from a game. But what I'm hoping for with Outlaws is a very good like story path with some extras to do if I'm really digging the game. And I'm sure, considering it's an Ubisoft game, there will be lots of extras. But this game looks interesting to me. I'm very keen to try it. And that actually, similarly, for Assassin's Creed Shadows, which looks really good. It's Assassin's Creed in Japan, two protagonists with various different fighting styles. Stylistically looks quite interesting, and apparently Ubisoft has said that it is a bit of a smaller game than some of the recent, like the big Assassin's Creed entries, which I actually think is a good thing. I'm intrigued about both of these games. I'm more excited about Star Wars, but I am also anticipating Assassin's Creed as well. I think they only come out a month apart from each other, which is a curious decision on Ubisoft's part. But
have you ever been are you an Assassin's Creed person? Like in recent years, have you played some of those games?
The last one I played was Valhalla.
Okay.
For me, it's so just to confirm it, Star Wars comes out in August and Assassin's Creed in November, which is still pretty close to each other for the type of games that these are, but timelines. For me, I have, in modern times, have jumped into an Assassin's Creed game, usually when I have a new console and it's one of the only games available.
Mm-hmm.
Like that was me with Valhalla. I think I got my PlayStation 4.
That's exactly what Valhalla did. Yeah.
And it was like there wasn't really a lot available, but Assassin's Creed Valhalla was available. And I didn't really like that game stylistically. It just wasn't for me. But from a direction perspective, I think that like, you know, samurai and stuff like that is like just more alluring. It's more interesting to me than like Norse assassins, you know,
yeah.
Just, for whatever reason, I think maybe it's just further away from my experience and my kind of world that it's more mystical in its way, and I'm intrigued about it. Are either of you excited for either of these games?
I'm kind of looking forward to Assassin's Creed Shadows.
Okay.
I think I'm intrigued by you know, the idea of playing as Yasuke, the black samurai, which you know, a real historical figure, an African samurai in medieval Japan. Like, I'm actually very intrigued to check that out, and it's been a while since I last played an Assassin's Creed. like you, I think last time was Valhalla. Over the years, I tried to revisit some of the older ones. I played both Origins and Odyssey. I vibed with Odyssey more because of ancient Greece.
Yep.
And so if we just go by a vibe check, obviously playing in Japan, very much my sort of aesthetic and vibe and, you know, the two play styles, one more head-on, one more like actual assassin, you know, like a stealth gameplay.
Yep.
So yeah, Shadows I'm looking forward to. Star Wars, it looked very cool, but as we have established, as we know about me, I have never seen a Star Wars movie, so there's that.
I would be surprised if you played Outlaws. I think Outlaws, if Outlaws gets like a 9 or 10 out of 10, maybe you'll check it out, but I don't think it's going to get that high. I think it's going to be like a good 8. But that's fine, I think, for the type of game.
As long as
it
does better than the Avatar game.
Hey, which... look, that Avatar game, people who loved Avatar seem to dig it at least, you know? And that, yeah. I think for games like this, sometimes that's the most you can ask for.
Yeah.
You know, like I think it's difficult to grade on like the Spider-Man curve or whatever, where that is just like a great video game, whether you like Spider-Man or not, you know? Shahid, do either of these games interest you in any way?
Star Wars, definitely I'll take a look at that.
Okay. That's interesting. We've got the divide here. But yeah, I'm looking forward to both of these. The next game for me, I think is a Federico game, but I am also intrigued about it. Dragon
it's funny
Age,
you mentioned
the Veil
that
Guard.
Because I've never played the Dragon Age game.
No, so. Neither have I. But and I didn't think that you had, but just knowing the games that you have enjoyed, like I know you really like Dragon's Dogma, right? And
I think.
So here's what interests me about Dragon Age, the Veil Guard, is it's like a big RPG, right? We have a bit more action combat. Mm-hmm. I think for me, this could maybe scratch the itch that Baldur's Gate did for a lot of people. Because obviously story and like characters is a big part of it and how the team interacts. But the combat is a little bit more active. And I could get by with the Dungeons and Dragons style, but the problem I felt like and I know this is probably what a lot of people like, but I felt like I didn't really have a lot of control over what was happening in the combat in Baldur's Gate, which was exciting, but sometimes I just wanted to move the story forward, but I was like, I just was really struggling with like picking what the right moves and stuff would be, where Dragon Age has more kind of like action adventure style combat. The gameplay that they showed off as like during, it wasn't actually during a showcase, which is interesting, just kind of did it separately. I think because the trailer had people feeling quite mixed how it was stylistically, because the game doesn't look visually anything like the trailer. I think they were going for a tone piece and kind of didn't really land it. But the actual action looked really fun and interesting and like visually exciting. So I'm intrigued. I've never played a Dragon Age, but I'm willing to give it a go.
Yeah, same actually. Like I was watching a gameplay video yesterday and I've never played a Dragon Age game, but I think it looks really nice. And, you know, I'm very much into action RPGs lately, you know, if only because I've been... We're going to talk about this later, but I've been playing through Dragon Quest XI, which is as traditional as you can go in terms of JRPGs. So anything that is more action-y gets a thumbs up from me. Yeah.
Astrobot is a game I'm assuming we're all intrigued about.
Yes. Yes. 100%.
What do you like about it, Federico?
I'm really intrigued by the idea of Sony... now sort of maybe having a mascot again. And the idea of Sony having potentially found a way to make their own Mario game through, you know, and embracing the PlayStation universe, you know, with all the references that we've seen in the Astrobot trailer. I really liked the Astrobot minigame, or like when you know the thing that came out when you got a PS5.
What was like it demo called? Kind of thing.
Yeah, and I really thought it was cute and charming, and one of the best experiences with the DualSense in terms of the haptic controls, for example. And to have a game where the development team was able to go, you know, all out and actually make a full-on action platformer with Astrobot. That is not like that is something that on PlayStation looks completely unlike any of the other like big time modern franchises. I think it's unique and colorful and fun, and you know it's gonna take advantage of the hardware, and it's gonna be full of PlayStation references over the years and you know throwbacks and all that kind of stuff. And it's something fresh from PlayStation, and that's why I'm looking forward to it.
What about you, Shay? What do you think about
the Love Astrobot?
Astrobot. Yeah,
absolutely love Astrobot. Loved the original VR one. That was the year I made it my number one, but I got outvoted. I can't even remember by what, but I think you were right to outvote me. It was probably Mario. He should be retired by now. But
he just keeps hanging on, that guy. He's so hard to get rid of.
And I buy every Mario game there is. Yeah, Astrobot, absolutely wonderful icon. I love that the character is cute because you hardly ever get to see PlayStation play with cute.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I think they did a great job with this. And I think the PS5 demo, I mean, it's a pretty fleshed out demo, let's face it. I mean, it wasn't huge by modern standards, but it was a lot of fun and just ridiculously cute. And so to see that extended makes me very happy because I think I'm going to love it.
I love a good like 3D platformer, right? And this looks like a good one. And I agree that like it's kind of sad that over the years, PlayStation hasn't really been able to like fully embrace a mascot. Like it feels like they've stop, start with a bunch of different. And like I guess at this point, probably the closest they have is Ratchet. Maybe, but yeah. Like that's, you know, because it was Sackboy for a long time, but that's done now. I think Astrobot is really like a better encapsulation of PlayStation than it just being a thing. Because I think at this point, whether it was the case or not initially, Mario kind of embodies Nintendo design, like. You know, if you look at a Switch, you're like, oh, that kind of looks like Mario. You know what I mean? It's like, oh, it's red and black, and like, you know, it's like that fits. And there's like the general overall aesthetic where it's like soft in its design. And Astrobot clearly like echoes the PlayStation 5 design.
It's
language.
The ethos. It's the ethos of each company, right? So the ethos of Nintendo is embodied by Mario.
Yep.
In the old days, the ethos of Sega was embodied by Sonic because they wanted to be a bit more edgy, a bit more spiky, bit faster, right?
And Chili with dogs.
PlayStation, yeah. And so what with PlayStation, we never really had that. It was much more about how cool it was. I mean, Sackboy, if you remember, only came out in the PS3 era.
Mm-hmm.
And they've had so many other great characters. Kratos is a good one, but if
you wouldn't
really
want him as your mascot, though.
He's not your
you?
Mascot. Yeah. He's not your mascot.
It's the same as like they kind of had Crash for a while, but then that went away. And you know,
Spyro,
like, yeah, Croc. Do you remember Croc?
Yeah,
Legend of the Gobos or whatever it was called. I don't know, man. But
yeah,
like, it was kind of a lot of stop starts and potentials, but it feels like Astrobot, something they wholly own. And it fits, like,
and it feels kind of Japanese as well.
It does. Well, it reminds me, I mean, and everybody, of like those Sony Aibo dogs,
right?
From like the 2000s.
Yeah, it's
got to
be deliberate.
Aesthetic. Yeah, but yeah, so I'm excited for this game because the trailer, like in the gameplay that they show, it just looks really bombastic and fun and just like a good time. Mm-hmm. And all of the previews that I've seen of this, people were just like, yeah, no, this is the real deal. And I'm happy to see this. Like, I hope that they're able to take this the distance, right? Astro Kart, right? Like, let's go. Like, Astro Smash, you know, like, go for it. Make all of the games that they should make, right? Like, I would love a Astro Kart that features, like, fun versions of Astrobot dressed up in different, like, characters so I could be Kratos or I could be Aloy or whatever. There's enough like characters in PlayStation now where you can do something fun like this, and I hope that they do. I want to mention one more before I'll hand over to Federico for one, I think. Mixtape is a game that I don't really understand what it is. I just like the vibe. So this is a game where it is described as, on the last night of high school, three friends embark on one more adventure together, play through a mixtape of memories set to the soundtrack of a generation. It's like, looks like one of those coming of age, like vibe games, but the entire soundtrack is like 80s music. It just looks really fun, and like the vibes of the music really enticed me from the trailer. But the last one, big surprise to be honest, The Legend of Zelda, Echoes of Wisdom. This time you play as Zelda.
Yes.
Big surprise. Link, it felt like it was going to be a remake, right, that they were going to announce.
Yeah, it did feel like another remake based on the same engine as the Link's Awakening remake. But no, this is a wholly original title where you play as Princess Zelda instead of Link. The idea being that as you are... The presentation started with a trailer showing Link obviously trying to rescue Zelda from Ganon. And however, Link disappears, sort of gets sucked into this rift in the ground, and other rifts appear all across Hyrule, and you're left controlling Princess Zelda. And by controlling Princess Zelda, you're not using a sword and shield like Link. You're using a new type of weapon called the Tri-Rod, where with this rod, it's like this magical weapon that allows you to basically create copies of objects. So you can magically create a copy, and these copies are called Echoes. And you can copy, according to, you know, to Nintendo, almost whatever you want. And it's basically a way to, at least the way that I've interpreted this game so far, it's what if Tears of the Kingdom, but instead of crafting things, you can use things you've seen before and recreate them from scratch. Sort of like recipes. So, for example, Nintendo showed, well, you don't know how to reach a higher platform? Well, you can make a staircase out of beds, or you can use, what did they show in addition to the beds? Like the pots, obviously.
Yeah, like different villains, like you can actually...
Enemies, like you can create echoes of enemies and use them to your advantage. I think what this game is doing, you know, beyond playing as Zelda, which is, you know, a big finale in and of itself. But what I think Nintendo is doing here is taking the Tears of the Kingdom formula. So this idea that a Zelda game is what you make of it. And of course, in Tears of the Kingdom, because of its massive scale, there was the Zonai devices and the crafting and the recipes and the upgrades. Here, it's going to be much more scaled down, but they're still going to give you some component of crafting that allows each player to have a different experience playing the game, which seems to be what Nintendo is really going for these days with Zelda games. Like, it started with the Breath of the Wild, where the unique aspect was the exploration. Each player can explore differently. And then in Tears of the Kingdom, they opened this, you know, this new frontier where it's like, well, actually, not only can you explore anywhere, but you can also make stuff out of anything. And here, it's obviously going to be a smaller game than Tears of the Kingdom, but the same philosophy seems to apply.
Yeah, it's really interesting. Like, it seems like a game where, like, problem solving is going to be key, like creative problem solving. I'm really intrigued to see how the mechanics feel, right? Because it doesn't feel like Zelda can participate in any combat. And I'm intrigued for, like, what that's going to feel like and how you kind of get out of different scrapes. And, yeah, it also feels very much like the... top down, basically, Zelda games of old, you know, like Link to the Past.
Link to the Past on the Super Nintendo, or Link's Awakening. That was the top down perspective.
Link's Awakening was the one I was thinking of.
And it's coming out at the end of September.
Unbelievably.
So it's basically ready. They have a Zelda game just ready to go, and, you know, on the Nintendo Switch, of course. Wild. This is going to be. After the iOS review season, this is going to be my reward. A Zelda game at the end of September.
Yeah, I would say overall it was a pretty decent Summer Games Fest season. There was like a bunch of stuff going on, and there's a lot of different things happening. I think showcase-wise, Microsoft had the best showcase. Like, they had the largest selection of games, which is not surprising considering how many studios they have. And I think they did a good job of presenting them for as well as they could, all things considered. So, it was interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I want to see what you guys have been playing. Shahid, have you been playing anything at the moment that you wanted to talk about?
I wanted to mention, rather boringly, that I'm also looking forward to Call of Duty Black Ops 6.
Yes. Actually, looks really good, right? Like, it looks great. It looks great.
I mean, it's, AAA fodder. It's going to be derivative, but it's what I love. So, yeah, looking forward to that.
The thing that was the most intriguing to me that they showed about Black Ops was the movement, like the way that they've changed, like you can sprint in any direction now, stuff like that. Mm. It's like one of those things where they show you it and you're like, oh yeah, no, that's something that should definitely happen. So yeah, it looks cool. I will probably do for this like I do for every Call of Duty game, which is like give it a go. And I usually enjoy the campaigns. Like the multiplayer is just not my thing. But the campaigns I usually enjoy, so I'm intrigued about this one too. Like, the story seems really interesting. It's kind of like Cold War-y, right? Like more modern Cold War-y. So yeah, it looks cool. But have you been playing anything? You've been playing Call of Duty?
I have. I'm not, believe it or not. I've been playing, surprisingly, Animal Well.
Oh, okay.
Which is beautiful. Absolutely beautiful. It feels really old school, but it looks really fresh, despite the pixel graphics. I mean, it looks like an indie game, but it's gorgeous. It's got such visual depth, and it's got immense puzzle depth. I'm embarrassed to say that I had to get my son to help me right at the very beginning. And once he did, and got over the first puzzle, this is how it works.
Mm.
And I completely missed something incredibly obvious that only a proper gamer would understand. But once I got it, like, kind of woke up all the dormant neural networks in my head and reminded me of how this kind of thing works. I mean, lots and lots of puzzling, very chill, but beautiful. Not demanding in the platforming sense, like, say, something like Celeste, but definitely that feeling of exploration and wonder. Because although it's got the look of a Metroidvania, it's not really a Metroidvania at all. It's much more that old school feel of just endless discovery based on how many of the puzzles you can unlock and decipher. And you tend not to feel blocked either. That's the other thing. So there are so many different paths to explore. But it does give you the sense that there is enormous depth to it. Haven't got too far. Believe it or not, I got it on the on Steam. So I've been playing it on the Steam Deck.
Looks like a good Steam Deck game, to be honest.
Yeah, it really is. Yeah. Really is. It makes me long for an OLED one, though, so it might be time for an upgrade.
Don't let me be the man to tell you, but the OLED Switch rules. The OLED Steam Deck, I should say, sorry. It's really, 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 really good. It's like not just good because it's OLED, like... The faster Wi-Fi makes a difference you wouldn't necessarily expect, but then your games download quicker and better battery life. It's a great upgrade. It's the Switch 2. Switch 2. I keep saying that. It's the Steam Deck 2. I don't know why they didn't just go for it. I think maybe they didn't want to like cannibalize the market too much of their own, but they made a big... There's a lot of big improvements to the Steam Deck.
Slightly bigger screen as well, right?
Yes, actually. I keep forgetting that part, but yes. The Animal Well, I've heard nothing but good things about. It's on my list to check out at some point.
And talking of faster Wi-Fi, I went ahead and took Federico's advice and got one of those fancy, flashy Wi-Fi 6E Asus routers. And I set up Moonlight and got all of that stuff working. And it's just been brilliant. Really amazing. Nice. I had to muck about with the screen because I got that preposterous 57-inch ultra-wide screen. But it doesn't matter. You know, I've got everything running remotely now, and on the iPad Pro screen, it looks great. I almost got to the point where I considered doing the Joypad hack and cutting something in half to try and get it to fit. I don't know. I'm quite happy having it sit on the keyboard stand and using a controller. It just feels great. Just feels really personal, you know, to have a PC anywhere in the house that's powerful enough to play any of the games I've got on my big Kickass PC in the shed.
Yeah.
So thank you, Federico.
No, you're welcome.
Number one enabler.
Yeah, wouldn't always have got any of it working without him, so thanks.
What have you been playing, Federico?
So first of all, I can't believe I forgot to mention before, just quickly, hello, Metroid Prime 4 Beyond.
Yes.
Oh, yes!
Mario & Luigi
Brothership. Like, Mario & Luigi, so this is a brand new RPG coming after the closing of Alpha Dream, the previous developers of those Mario & Luigi games. From what I know, part of Alpha Dream is now working inside Nintendo, so hopefully the original creators of that series will be working on this one. It looks fantastic. It's coming out November 7th. And Metroid Prime 4 Beyond, now officially called, coming in 2025. Now, this is going to be a cross Switch 1, Switch 2 release, right?
Has to be.
And it looked beautiful, consistent with previous Metroid Prime titles. They had that shot at the end of the trailer showing like almost like the Halo-like environment with the nature and the birds and the colorful flowers and all that sort of stuff. I don't know. It felt very Halo-like to me, which is unsurprising given that I think a couple of years ago we saw the article that a bunch of the original Halo developers had gone working to Retro Studios on Metroid Prime 4. So hopefully we'll see some of those influences on the new game. Anyway, I've been mostly playing two games. One at night and the other, if I can, during the day. The one that I've been playing at night, because it's very chill, very cozy, you know, good vibes before going to sleep, is Dragon Quest XI. This is a game from a few years ago. It's as classic a JRPG as it can possibly get. Incredible story, incredible vibes, beautiful open world. Obviously the art of the late Akira Toriyama. I think it's a JRPG for the ages, really. I'm about 45 hours into the game and I've only begun Act 2. The game is massive. The game's massive. I'm playing the definitive edition, which has some extras. The original game came out on PlayStation 4 and Xbox One many years ago. I've been playing on Steam Deck. It's excellent on the OLED display. And surprisingly, it's the sort of JRPG that, despite its massive scale, it really lends itself well to be picked up and played for like 30 minutes, 45 minutes before bed, and then you continue the next day, or maybe you leave it for like a couple of days and you resume and it's still waiting for you. Like, it's not complicated or anything, but the story has some interesting twists that I was not expecting, even for a classic JRPG. And the vibes are absolutely chill, and you know, it's a game that and it's challenging because it can be a challenging game, and I know that the post game content, like, it's gonna be especially challenging to get through, but you know, if you like this sort of classic mechanics, it doesn't get any better than this. And I've also been playing Elden Ring again in preparation for the DLC. I left Elden Ring 2 years ago. I finished the main story, never touched it again, left it at about 70 hours of game time. And so I picked it up again and I had no idea where I was at, what I was doing. I knew that even if I wanted to, I couldn't get access to the DLC content, Shadow of the Earth Tree, because I needed to beat a specific boss that I remember I had not beaten in my previous playthrough. It was an optional boss.
Okay.
Which I did in the meantime. I did it today. And what I discovered over the past few days that I've been playing Elden Ring again is that I left it with a ridiculously overpowered character. Because I remember I was being so frustrated by the final boss of the main story, the Elden Beast, that I just spent like a month overpowering and grinding my character. And so I left the game at level 195, which is pretty high. It's a lot of levels, and it's pretty high for what I needed to do, honestly. And as a result, like Mog, which is the final boss that I needed to do before the DLC, I absolutely obliterated in like 30 seconds today. I can access the DLC now, but I think before I do that, I want to try and beat Malenia as well. So this is the famous hard boss in Elden Ring, the knight with the red hair. You guys remember like a couple of years ago, the dude online that used to be like, let me solo her, like yes. The Elden Ring player that would beat Malenia on his own. Yeah, That was the popular Elden Ring boss. So I want to do that, I think, maybe today, and then I'll start playing through the DLC. Because if anything, playing through the older regular game has reminded me that when you sort of get your bearings again and know what you're doing. As part of that, for example, I respect my character. I went back to a build that I knew I was using and was comfortable with 2 years ago. And that allowed me to pick up the game much more quickly. And so one of the things that it made me remember is that it's a beautiful game to get lost into, despite its challenges. And it's been a bit of a shock, like the first day, especially coming from Dragon's Dogma this year, which looks similar in terms of like color palette and you know, character design, but it plays very differently from Elden Ring. And so it was a bit of a shock to remember, oh yeah, this game, it can absolutely, you know, it can absolutely destroy you if you don't respect it, which is it's a conversation that we had 2 years ago. And so sort of putting myself in that mindset again, it took me a couple of days, and now that I have, I'm loving it all over again, and I cannot wait. I bought the DLC. I think I'm going to do Malenia and then jump into Shadow of the Erdtree.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Is that it for your playing list?
That's it for me. Yeah, this mostly I've been playing these two.
Okay. My gaming time in the last, I don't know, month is basically all retro gaming. I picked up an Aeon Odin 2, which is a high-powered Android emulation machine, essentially. It's really just like a high-powered Android phone inside of a game controller, essentially, but it's very nicely put together. And to me, this made the most sense because really, from the research that I've done, the Android machines have the most capability, can run the most stuff, and are relatively the easiest to set up. And I watched some cool guide videos from Retro Game Core. I'll put a link in the show notes to his Aeon Odin guide. I just basically followed him and made some tweaks of my own with the way that I wanted to set it up. This was super good. It was very helpful and kind of got me to where I wanted to be. I have been playing mostly 3DS games right now because I loved the 3DS, and it's a system that had a lot of games that I really enjoyed, and I've been able to replay a bunch of those because I don't have access to them anymore, at least in a way that I want to play them. And so I've been spending a lot of time with Animal Crossing New Leaf, which I'd forgotten how much fun that was, and kind of you can see the kind of underpinnings for what became New Horizons. The weird thing about this game is you're the mayor of the town as well, which was, I believe you're the mayor in New Horizons, but they do have some of the same mechanics of like you get to change the island or like the place that you're living. Like, you know, that kind of some of the mayor mechanics in New Leaf. I'm playing Mario Kart 7 because, like, why not? Mario and Luigi, Bowser's Inside Story. I enjoyed a lot of the Mario and Luigi games, and I'm interested in Brothership, but not, like, super interested, but I would like to pick it up again if the reviews are good. I'm not sure what I think about the art style of Brothership, which is the new one that's coming out. I'm not sure about that. And also New Super Mario Brothers 2. Like at the moment, I've been playing like a bunch of games that are just simple to play. until I choose the game. Like, I want to dive into a chunkier game, but I just haven't decided which yet. Like, it's going to be, it's either going to be Pokemon Sun, which I have wanted to replay for so long, because I remember I really enjoyed that game at the time, and I'm wondering how it will hold up. But I'm also interested in playing something a bit chunkier, but I just haven't decided what yet. So yeah, but I'm really enjoying the Noden 2. It's a great way to, you know, like Delta on the iPhone kind of got me interested in emulating again. And this has kind of taken it to the next kind of level for me, where I'm able to replay a bunch of games that I already own in a way that is easier for me to manage now. So yeah, I'm really, really enjoying it. I really recommend this thing. It's a lot of fun.
I was looking quite seriously at a ton of retro stuff. I mean, went deep down the rabbit hole, obviously nowhere near as deep as Federico, but, you know, nobody can do that, let's face it. And that was one of the devices that really caught my eye. That one's OLED, right?
No, the other one's not OLED.
It's not OLED. But it's a great screen, though. It's a great screen.
Which one is about $300 to $400 in OLED? I can't remember now. Anyway, but that was one of the devices that really looked really good. But my question for you, Mike, is I know you said Android, according to your research, seems to be easiest to set up. But why not something on your Steam Deck? Wouldn't that have served the same purpose?
Steam Deck's too big for what I'm, like, physically too large for what I want this thing to be. Yeah. Like, I want something much more portable, which I know is like a silly thing to say, but the Steam Deck, whilst being a handheld, it's not super portable. Like, it's big, and the Air Noden 2 is small. Like,
is it pocketable?
there are more pocketable, but like for me, this just very easily goes into my backpack, basically. Like, I got a little case that it comes with. Like, the screen is about the same size as my Pro Max, and then it's got, like, you know, it's got like the game controller around it, right? It looks like a kind of like a small Switch. I expect it's pretty similar in size to the Switch Lite, if that is at all helpful. But I wanted something small and light, and that I could use. You know, for me, the Steam Deck, like, I kind of want to just keep that for what it is. That is where I play the newest games, and then have something a bit smaller and a bit more portable for playing some other games. I mean, you can get smaller systems than this one and play a lot of the games I'm playing, but my research seemed to suggest to me that it just wasn't either A, the form factor that I wanted, or B, didn't run Android. And like, Android was what I wanted, because it, you know, like, for example, I can put the Dropbox app on this thing to download my ROMs.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Right? Because it's an Android device. It has the Play Store.
Yeah.
And like, so there is just like an easiness to it. Like, for example, when I was setting it up, there were some links that I needed to tap to download some emulators. Well, I could just open Chrome and do that, rather than like type in something. Yeah, it was just like nice and easy to do it that way. So yeah, I really like the Air Noden 2. It is a super cool machine. It's also just a fun Android thing. Like, I've been meaning to play Stardew Valley again, and I was like, well, I could just actually just play the Android version of Stardew Valley on the Air Noden 2. It's just like built-in controls, like right there. So, and also being a touchscreen is very helpful for some devices. So like, it would be really hard to play some 3DS games without a touchscreen. Like, there's just some stuff where it's like, you can emulate the pen, but you have to like use the cursor. Like, you have to use one of the analog sticks as a cursor, and that's not a nice experience. So like, being able to sometimes touch the touchscreen is good, and a lot of the emulators for DS and 3DS do like a good job of letting you manage between the two screens and stuff like that. So this stuff is super cool, but don't steal games is what I'll say. Like, just don't steal games. Like, I personally, for me, like, if you can acquire a ROM, acquire the ROMs for games you own.
Yeah.
And for me as well, keep it to retro. Like, don't do modern stuff. That that's how I feel. They're kind of my two feelings about game emulation. But a lot of this would be solved if Nintendo just made these games available. But that is a story.
We don't need to get into that. Okay?
For another time.
Yes.